Natural Resource Subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means to order. Open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5547, Watershed Enhancement Board. Paul, do you have anything to get us rolling with?
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman, as the committee at your place, you have two handouts from OWEB that they'll be going over in response to questions from yesterday. I think that's where Jeff will be starting out today.
Okay. Mr. Huntington.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jeff Huntington from the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, the Director. I have Cindy Cry at the table with me, our fiscal manager. I brought, as Mr. Siebert said, two pieces to talk to you about in response to questions I had yesterday. The first one is a one-pager that I believe Representative Morgan asked, just displaying the allocated amounts of funds available for grant awards in both the 9901 and 0103 biennium, broken out by the different types of funds, and broke it out between the capital and the operations accounts. And as you'll see in 9901, we had an amount of general funds that was used for the grant program, which was backed out in the last legislative session, and we shifted entirely to federal funds for the non-capital portion of our grant program in this current biennium, and that is a real aggregate roll-up. We have a breakout, and I may not have mentioned this in the last couple of days, by fund type and by geographic area or by type of project activity available for you. So we can provide you, if you, for instance, were interested in seeing every habitat channel obstruction removal or bank bank stream habitat replacement project, for instance, or any one of those 11 categories, we can give you the roll-up of all the projects we funded in that particular category. Or if you have a question about a part of the state that you're interested in seeing, or by fund source. So we invite any kind of inquiries into the kinds of grants that are behind these figures.
So, Jeff, this would be a breakdown of all the different categories. Can you offer that to us?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have we keep track of the capital grants that we give out according to 11 different categories, and then and I believe mention those in the overview. And then on the non-capital, the non-on-the-ground type of projects, we track them by about five different categories. And then also do it geographically.
So if you can get us, I think it would be helpful if you give us a printout of all the categories.
Page 46 in the book, as we break out of the different categories, we track by fund source.
But you mentioned you had a list of all the projects within those categories that you'd offer to us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and it would be very similar to the acquisition handout I gave you yesterday is a great example of the kind of breakout it is. It's a thumbnail sketch, the grantee, the total cost, and it's a fairly thick document, but we've got it, and I think we have copies for the committee.
Jeff, you gave me a great segue. You mentioned the acquisition yesterday. Do you have a breakout of the projects where you were directly involved in the acquisition, but part of the agreement was that you, OWEB, would fund the improvements or the enhancements to the properties? Which I've had conversations since yesterday with another member of the committee where that might be helpful, because I think that is part of the purchase.
Chair Messily, I'm sure that we can get that for you.
You have signals going on behind you there.
Oh, maybe she's already got it for us.
Yeah, that's true. I think probably what she's handing Paul is the roll-up of all the projects by category that you asked for. In terms of the acquisitions, there would be only two grants that OWEB or GWEB were responsible for applying for that were federal funds that resulted in acquisitions, and you mentioned one of them yesterday, and the other was, I think, in Tillamook County. and then I think it'll take a little bit of legwork, but we can go back through and probably come pretty close to finding out what projects we may have provided restoration funds to that were perhaps an NRCS funded project. I assume that's the.
And I'm not judging on that good or bad.
I understand.
Just want a sense of what that entails.
Okay, and we will work on that tonight and try to bring the information back to you tomorrow.
Sure.
The other question that came up yesterday was regarding the Williams Creek acquisition. And what I did was provide the committee this morning or this afternoon with a copy of the agenda item staff report for that funding cycle for that part of the state, which was the southwest region of Oregon, our Region 2, at the December 20, 2002 board meeting. And this is a copy of the roll-up staff report that is kind of the overlay to all of the information that we have in the file for the board to have available to them. I'd be happy to provide you with the application and the appraisal and the rest of the things in the file, but I thought this was actually a fairly good description of the different components of the project review with respect to the Williams Creek Land Acquisition Project. And it is starts on page 2 of the staff report and goes to page 4. I want to say that in looking at the file and discussing it a little bit, it's probably a bit of an overstatement in the summary that you received yesterday to say that the property could not be developed or could not have been developed due to ESA concerns. It's probably more accurate to say that there would have been significant hurdles to getting permits for operation, whether by the county or private sector, but they had a lot to contend with in the context of operating the site for the intended purpose within the bounds of the Endangered Species Act and the federal permits that would have, the consultations and all that would have gone along with that. And I understand that there was a fair amount of discussion about that subject as the application was coming in the door, and people had talked to the county with the Watershed Council and the land trust that was involved in this. I do understand that the potential did exist for the property to be sold by the county to a private property, to a private entity that could have chosen to take on the risk or the effort to have gone through the process. I do not have any information that was imminent or contemplated at the time the funding proposal arrived at OWEB's doorstep. I listened to your comments yesterday and appreciated them and reflected on them some last night, and it seemed to me there are a couple of points I'd like to make this afternoon. The first one is that what OWEB has in context of an acquisition program, I frankly view as very acquisition neutral. We've tried to set up a process that examines a full breadth of information, and if by statute and a party or an entity is eligible to apply for funds to accomplish an acquisition, then we go through the steps of a process that is intended at least to draw out whatever critical information is available on the three components that I mentioned yesterday that are in our funding criteria, but none of which create an automatic trigger for the decision to be made one way or the other. And as of now, the statute that is run, that our program runs by, does allow us to and requires us to accept applications both by local government organizations and for deeds to be held by local government. But I heard maybe more of an underlying concern about that was being expressed yesterday about the position that counties are in that maybe is a little different than other applicants that are coming in the door, and that relating to their authority, their ongoing authority over land use decisions in the county, and the implications that could have on any particular funding decisions over time. And I appreciated that, and as I discussed that with staff, I wanted to come back today and be very clear. I'm very comfortable committing that we can, as an agency, look at the zoning changes that have occurred with respect to any particular acquisition that comes in the door for OWEB consideration, have a very explicit discussion of both the timing and the frequency and the nature of any changes in the zoning that's applicable to a parcel that's proposed for funding, and have that flagged and discussed explicitly as part of staff reports with my board, and do that not just for parcels that have been that are similar to the Williams Creek, but for all parcels. I think if you look at the staff report I provided you today, we mentioned what the current land use zone ordinance is, the applicable land use restrictions are, but we don't talk about whether those have recently changed or frequently changed in the near past. And that's something that we're happy to start doing, and I frankly think you made a very interesting and good point that had not really been discussed by us fully. And so we will start doing that. We have the information readily at hand because of the appraisal process we implement now.
As you probably know, Jeff, there's
I think several bills actually before this body. I don't know where they are, but I think they're being worked, some of them at least,
where some of the counties are, and AOC, I believe, is very interested in having county approval of or at least allowing the counties to at least have a hearing. And not just OWEB, but for all the federal and other acquisitions that are going on, particularly when the usage changes. And so I think that maybe fits with what I just heard you say, that that would not be a problem for your agency, but I think it could probably apply to some of your purchases, or some of the acquisitions at least.
And Chair Mesler, there's no question that some of the pending legislation would adjust our process, and we can accommodate that easily given the rules that we have in place, and because they're built toward considering a lot of different pieces, and it's just the way and the timing. And we will do that depending on the outcome of all the different legislation that's pending. And we will begin this practice just as a matter of prudence, I think, based on the conversation we had yesterday.
The other item I want to bring back up again, and just to clarify for the record, because we did talk a little bit last night, is the policy, which we're not a policy committee, but we are involved in the funding end of it, the budgetary end of it, the usage of public funds to buy from other public agents, to acquire properties from other public agencies. And I understand from our conversation both yesterday and last evening that they do, the law does say that they have the authority to apply for funds under the Ballot Measure 66. Whether that was the intent of that to be for projects or whether that was the intent of that to be for acquiring land, where I'm having trouble sorting through. And so I'm not suggesting necessarily that we pursue that at this moment, but we might want to think about it and have a further discussion about it.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to discuss it more with you, and I'll provide you with kind of a clean breakout of the way the statute's set up that governs who can apply. And it doesn't really make any distinction among eligible applicants for restoration projects versus acquisition in the way the statute's currently drafted.
I understand that. Let me ask, is there any questions or comments from the committee before we move on? Okay, thank you.
With that, I'll pick up where we left off yesterday, and in a manner similar to yesterday, I'll try to watch my time so that somewhere around 2 o'clock at a convenient point, with the chair's indulgence, I'll step back and let you have a discussion with the chair of the IMST regarding their budget pieces. We left off on page 55, section 2.2 of the budget binder, and we were talking yesterday when we ended about Measure 66 grant program operational funds. And we're very, frankly, just at the very end of that. We had finished the portion on council support. We had had a discussion with the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program, and as you can see, there policy packages associated both with the transferring of LCREP from DEQ into OWEB to have us be the vessel for their budget, and then a revenue reduction package that applies to LCREP out of the Measure 66, and with the note that at least in the governor's revised budget and I believe the co-chair budget, both are proposals that are floating out there that there's an effort to move the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program entirely off of general fund and onto the Measure 66 operational monies and at some level of funding, which may or may not be different between the two proposals. I'm frankly not certain today. The IMST budget, kind of a couple of brief comments on that that will maybe set the context for your policy discussion about that in a few minutes. In 0103, the budget for the IMST was $900,000. In the aggregate, $400,000 of that was Measure 66 operational funds, and then $500,000 came as a grant from OWEB using federal funds to the science team. The governor's balanced budget reduces the core Measure 66 funding down to a level of $211,000 plus, and then OWEB is anticipating that, depending on the availability of federal funds in the next biennium, that we would continue with the federal fund portion of the IMST budget via a grant. Clearly, being able to supplement that base Measure 66 funding with some level of augmented federal funds depends in part on how we structure the backfill or fund shifting that is being proposed, and our capacity to do that kind of action will depend on how we manage the fund shifting. I do believe that the governor's revised budget proposal does contemplate shifting IMST entirely off of Measure 66 and onto federal funds at a level that would reflect the reduced funding here and the OWEB commitments of the additional money that we made this biennium. On Global page 56, section 2.2.5, there's just an essential package there that talks about the research fund. Again, I'll remind you that we discussed yesterday the total funds available in the Measure 66 research account are $1.4 million in capital and about $379,000 in operational monies. And based on the Attorney General's opinion, we do follow that continued fund constraints and the fund split that we see between the grant program funds and the operational funds. In 0305, OWEB will expect we will receive the work that we've contracted to Oregon State University to do to provide framing the RFPs that are necessary for beginning the research that has been suggested to us that needs to be undertaken by the IMST. The IMST has suggested some research they would like to see undertaken. OSU is framing those RFPs for us now, and when they are framed and a budget is created that my board's reviewed, then I would expect I would come back in front of the emergency board and seek expenditure limitation to authorize us to commit the research funds in a very clear, definable way that we can discuss at that point.
And you said that comes out of operations?
What we are finding is that there's always a piece of a research project that can probably come out of capital money, but not all of it, and the majority is usually out of operational funds. We had experience both with Willamette Toxics last session that really was 100% out of operational monies because of the type of research. But when we did the Hinkle Creek project in partnership with OFIC and the Department of Forestry, we were able to fund a fair amount of it out of capital. Page 57, section 2.2.6 is the federal funds expenditure limitation. There are central packages there that folks can talk to you about, but what I want to do is just give you a sense of where we are headed with federal fund grant limitation, which will be key given that we've got at least two different installments of Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds that are at issue. When everything is said and done, the governor's balanced budget seeks for OWEB to have a federal fund limitation of $12,560,000. Of that, $12 million is for the federal fiscal year 02 Pacific Coastal Salmon Fund, and we have in policy package 210 broken that out a little bit so that you see about $11.6 million there, and we put the rest, which is the overhead that's associated with that grant, in a package in the operational section of the agency's budget, in part because we have a limited duration position that's dependent on that. But those two pieces together with the remaining limitation we have on a BPA grant that we received about half of the expenditure limitation in the current biennium, we're asking for $560,000 of limitation to advance that BPA grant. And so I will say again, in terms of the governor's balanced budget, In this package, we're seeking $12.1 million, but overall, the federal fund limitation between Policy Package 110 and Policy Package 210 is that $12,560,000 expenditure limitation. Now, the governor's revised budget and the co-chair budget proposal will both need to deal with the events of Congress in the last few months that occurred after this budget was put together. The federal fiscal year 03 allotment to Oregon from the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund will require an additional $12.9 million in federal fund authorization. So those two aggregate totals, we'll be talking to LFO staff and the committee at work session about a total federal fund limitation that's needed on the order of about $25,460,000. And that will cover both of the federal federal fund grants and the BPA grant. We have some earmarks that are attached to the 03 Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund grant that affect the limitation amount, and that's why it looks different than we keep saying we had a $14 million grant that's coming to Oregon, but the expenditure limitation doesn't quite reflect that, and that's because of earmarks that Congress put on those funds.
Jeff, you mentioned of the $369,000, part of that would be used for one position. What is the rest of that used for?
In the governor's balanced budget, we've broken that $369,000 into a piece that's used for a limited duration position, and then a piece that was not allocated toward any defined administrative cost. As we have watched over the last month, things firm up with respect to the expectations of the federal government and the strings that they're attaching on the new federal funds. We have begun to put together a short list of some database issues and management issues that we need in order to comply with the federal fund constraints. I actually was going to try to meet with LFO staff this morning on that and couldn't make the appointment, but we've got something in place to work through with staff and with the committee during work session so that we can talk in very specific terms about the overhead. That's all I have on federal fund limitation. I don't have anything really to remark on with respect to other fund expenditure limitation unless the committee has questions. That's found at Global page 58. And that's really the end of the grant program discussion.
Any questions? It looks like Representative Johnson got a thought.
Yes, please, Mr. Chair. Again, I apologize for asking a question that may be elementary to my colleagues, particularly Representative Morgan, who chaired this committee the last time. But I'm seeing the grant program for the first time, and the material that you handed out today was very helpful, all of the summaries of where the grants went. And I've been sitting here perusing the small grants. In my private life, I sit on the board of a charitable foundation, and we have certain thresholds that trigger when we can give money to people. In my case, it's with the possession of a 501c3 from the federal government, a letter of determination. We also have very strict rules about capital acquisition and what would happen to capital acquisition after the grant is made. And as I'm perusing the project summaries of the small grants, certain things jump out at me that just cause me to ask this question. I see a grant on page 6 of 19, and it really doesn't matter who it is or what it is, but it is for the retrofitting of sprinklers with low-flow nozzles, low-flow sprinkler heads, flexible tubing, and it appears to have something to do with better use of irrigation efficiency. When those capital acquisitions are made with public money, what happens to the capital goods after the grant is made and the materials are purchased? Are there prohibitions against resale? Who do these sprinkler heads belong to at the end of the day?
Chair Mesley, Representative Johnson, we talk a lot about those and about that issue because one of the struggles we have is putting agricultural land producers in a position to be able to conserve water, and it does require rolling stock capital in instances like that. And one of the things, I'm going to invite my deputy to join me so he can fill in the more detail than I can, but One of the things that we do is have a certain amount of time where we monitor the results of the grant, and there is an expectation in the grant agreement for the maintenance and on an ongoing basis of the things that are purchased with the money and the lifespan of the monitoring that will occur that the project has to be implemented. And beyond that time, I'm going to see if Ken can fill in the details, and because that's about the extent of what I can tell you. But we do have expectations built into the grant agreements about the maintenance and the ownership of the equipment for a certain amount of time that's associated with achieving the results that initially led us to invest in the first place.
Okay.
For the record, Ken Beardy, Deputy Director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. For projects such as replacement of sprinkler head sprinkler material, that becomes the property of the landowner. Is not retained as state property, is not maintained as state mm-hmm. property. The expectation is that they would use those in a manner that would reduce the out-of-stream use of water and that would conserve water, that would maintain their productive capacity of the land.
Follow up, Mr. Chair? Then one other, without going into the specifics of the names. Some of these names jump out at me because they're well-known Oregon names. And when I see that someone has received a grant and the name is sufficiently recognizable that it leaps out at me. A contractor will be hired to remove debris piles, use a backhoe and a dump truck. The debris consists almost entirely of wood, sawdust, and will be dumped in an appropriate site. Blackberries and noxious weeds will be removed by hand. I mean, that's why I got married. Somebody's got to do this work around my house. but my question is, why are we making a grant to do, with public money, to do ostensibly this kind of work that is debris removal? It comes under the heading of riparian restoration, but help me understand the fine point of the difference between hiring a handyman for somebody and doing something that restores habitat or riparian structure.
For the record, Ken Beerley again. That's an excellent question, and let me step back a bit and talk a little bit about the small grant program. I think it's important to understand that the small grant program is a way in which we have attempted to provide funds for local use without significant state review. And there are 28 small grant groups that are geographically spaced around the state. And it's the people in those communities made up of soil and water conservation district staff and watershed council staff who review the grant applications and make priorities and award those kind of projects. What we expect of them and what our staffers use is not what goes into the grant, but what the product is. And in this specific instance, there was, in fact, one of the staff brought that to me and said, my God, what are we spending money on? What the answer was that that will be replanted. The riparian area will be replanted, restored. It didn't show up in the brief description, but in conversation with the small grant team that made that recommendation to fund that was the consequence that we got as a result of this specific project. One of the other things that I think is important is that we are going to be looking at the entire small grant process and program over the next 6 months to a year to evaluate the effectiveness of that program in delivering small amounts of money in local communities through local groups.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Yes. I say this very respectfully. I come from a small community, and the same people are in leadership roles across a wide spectrum. They're Rotarians together. They are members of the hospital board together. They necessarily do business together. And what are your mechanisms for insulation that pals aren't making grants to pals to clean up debris and rent a backhoe and a dump truck and take down some blackberries?
Senator Mesley, Representative Johnson, the small grant program, the mechanism, the direct answer to your question is the mechanism that's in place is first there has to be a set of priorities that will drive any funding decisions on individual projects that come after that, and we sign off on those funding priorities. Second is once they get down to grant by grant, OWEB is ultimately, the recommendation is made to my staff that the small grant team wants to give a grant to so-and-so to do such-and-such. And the OWEB staff looks at that and makes sure that it fits both the priorities and the eligibility requirements that we have both in statute and in our rules for the main grant program. And then we go ahead and issue the check to the individual and do the and receive the monitoring and the feedback on the project, assuring that it was actually implemented the way it was supposed to be. This program was launched and is right now for us a pilot program, and it was launched in response to a great deal of discussion in this body about having what was called a cost share program that would essentially have picked up blocks of money and put a block of money in several different parts of the state to be administered locally just on a cost share basis without OWEB involvement. And so this program was devised as a compromise between the full-blown OWEB program and a straight block grant to a particular part of the state to administer as the local folks saw fit there. And what we've tried to do is create a whole lot of local decision-making flexibility on a trial basis with some guidance and see how effectively the money is invested and how it measures up against the priorities that we see when we go through the full-blown OWEB technical review process. The board is picking, and the only way, frankly, to get there from here, from where we were, do it on a trial basis, have a roll-up of a certain number of projects that were undertaken with some level of scrutiny, but not as much as we provide on our full grant program, and then review the program and see how it was going and decide whether we need to tighten it, and if so, how. And that's the place we are this summer.
One more follow-up, Mr. Chair? Two more follow-ups, Mr. Chair. How often can somebody come and do this? Because I see the same names appearing on here in multiple line items.
There is a limitation on the program for the number of grants that can be received by any individual in a given time period. Do you remember? A property owner could receive one grant per year through the small grant program. Soil and water conservation districts or watershed councils can be a delivery mechanism to get funds to a number of different property owners. So you may see that a name like that repeated. That would be a two-year roll-up, I believe, or two-calendar-year roll-up that you probably have.
It must be because I've got the same person's name on here with two different grant numbers, project numbers, and this is a 103.
Okay. That would be a two-calendar-year.
And last, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, you've got all of these people piling debris and buying low-flow nozzles and putting up fence and removing asphalt and planting. And how do you possibly have enough staff to be able to provide oversight for all of these projects and know that the funds are being applied appropriately?
Chair Messerly, Representative Johnson, we don't have enough staff to do a site-by-site visit. We do have expectations on documenting, both on a receipt basis, how the money was spent, and on a project completion report, the documentation that gives us a level of assurance that it is taking place. In the respect to the small grant program, we also have expectations with regard to the local small grant team that's comprised of the district and the council folks to be doing the follow-up on those projects as a predicate to having any more money flow to that team. And I'll say again, I think you're raising exactly the kind of questions that our review is going to raise this summer about how this program worked in its launching phase. It has proven to be a very popular thing with districts and councils and local folks to grab hold of some needed small projects. I'm not entirely comfortable that our two-sentence descriptors there are getting at some of the underlying restoration value of the activities that were funded, as opposed to just adequately describing the activities. But the questions that you're asking will determine whether or not OWEB moves forward with this program in 03-05 or pushes it back into our overall grant program where we have more stringent technical review by centralized teams.
I can tell you got one more.
Yes, please.
How did I know that?
Is it possible for any member of the public to come and scrutinize one of these grants in terms of, there's just a name on here and it'll say, you know, Fred Smith. Are the records available to come in and see what a level of follow-up Fred Smith provided? And that's obviously a fictitious name, but are these records open?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yes, ma'am. They are open, as would be the application and the materials that were the underlying that was the underlying basis for the decision, and the receipts that were sent in on the payments.
Thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Representative. I'm going to carry on the same line on Monday here. And this is no surprise to Jeff, but a concern I've had, Representative, is that how does the department know that the contractors get paid? They send the money to the local watershed council. They allocate it to the landowner, I guess, in these cases. And then how do we know that the contractors in many of these instances get paid?
Well, Mr. Chair, one beyond that, I'm looking at one, and this one caught my eye because I was in the helicopter business for 20 years. Aerial seed of 500 acres burned in a fire. Beyond knowing was the contractor paid for $23,000, how do you know he hasn't hired his brother-in-law?
Go ahead.
For the record, Ken Beerley, Chair Messerly, Representative Johnson, in that what we have with the small grant program were also the fire recovery emergency grants that were provided. And that is one of the specific fire recovery grants. What we have relied upon is, in that instance, it went through the Soil and Water Conservation District, to my recollection, and they are required by state statute to do competitive bidding. So we presume that they followed appropriate bidding procedures for that specific project.
Thank you.
Which begs an additional question. Are the private nonprofit watershed councils bound by the same requirements?
Mr. Chair, councils are not bound by the competitive bidding process. I understand that many do, but they are not bound by it. Those councils that use a public entity as their fiscal agent, which is about two-thirds, roughly, of the councils, would be bound to use the public bidding process that their fiscal agent is required to use.
These appear to be all small grants to individuals. And is that how this the small grants program is designed?
Chair Mesley, Representative Johnson, yes. Using the small grant teams as the review of project proposals, and frequently the projects are put together by soil and water conservation districts or councils that are working with the landowner to put in an application.
Well, Mr. Chair, I can't help but look beyond you and see Mr. Saperstein in the back of the room, and just as my eye was, yes, you, Ralph, just as my eye was coming down here, it said repair culvert. I've been out in some corporate-owned woods and see the extreme expense that some corporations are undertaking to put fish-friendly culverts in. If a Boise Cascade applied for one of these grants, would they be considered?
Chair Mesley, Representative Johnson, yes, not only in the small grant program, but in our regular grant program, and we have a, depending on which part of the state you're in, a fairly significant percentage of the dollars that we invest will go into replacement of fish passage barrier problems, culverts, and other issues that occur on private forest land and frequently commercial timber lands, as well as agricultural lands.
Have there been many instances of that?
Chair Messerly, Representative Johnson, there are two ways in which we've worked closely with the timber industry to address fish passage issues through the cooperation of the Oregon Forest Industry Council. And with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, there has been a significant cooperative effort to use private industrial timber landowners' resources to replace barriers and to restore fish habitat on industrial timberlands. Through many of our grants to councils and districts, I think the Scappoose Bay Watershed Council is one of the more appropriate ones, where they've done a prioritization scheme in the for the whole basin. They've looked across the landscape, those most important barriers to remove, and then applied for a grant to fund the removal of the top, I think, 10 or so. Has been a very successful effort that's been managed in a cooperation between the council and district to implement that effort. They worked with the individual landowners to get permission to remove those barriers, to replace those barriers, and it's been a way in which they picked off the most significant and the highest priority barriers.
And Representative Johnson, if you take a quick look at page 45 of the binder, we identify where we have a map that goes around the state and identifies the way we've spent money according to these categories. Global page 45 in the binder. You can look in the passage is one of the bars on the bottom on the x-axis of each of those funding graphs. And you can see in different parts of the state, for instance, the Southwest, we've spent more on passage, and that's culvert removal kind of activities.
I don't mean to interrupt you. I understand this, but I was just trying to say, knowing the expense that industrial timberland was going to comply, I just wanted to read out of how many grants have been made to industrial timber holders.
Chair Messler, Representative Johnson, we could probably come with a little effort pretty close to telling you. We have a breakout for that category.
I don't want you staying up all night to do it. I just wanted a ballpark. That's
well.
Our experience has been, Chair Messler, Representative Johnson, that we have not funded a large number with industrial land timber landowners. They have provided their funds themselves. Most of our resources have gone to either mixed groups like the Scappoose Bay or the Rogue Basin, where the barriers were lower in the system, or in places like the LC, where they were on private, either small woodlot owners or agricultural landowners.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience.
Could you, if you are able to break that out, Jeff, could you also break out the projects that were funded on state and federal lands?
Chair Messerly, we should be able to pull that. We rolled that up about a year ago for projects, and we should be able to add to that pretty readily.
Thank you. Other questions? All right, Senator Duke.
Yeah, I take it that the largest small grant you give is $10,000. How do you know on some of these projects whether the estimate that you're provided in the grant application for X number of dollars for the project is an accurate estimate? There's a ton of these things. You can't possibly be out there tracking all of these.
Go ahead.
Senator Messler, Senator Dukes, sorry about that. What we receive is a grant application for a specific amount of money. What we fund is what it costs based on receipts received. So what we actually expend may be less than what they applied for and were awarded. So they submitted an estimate for the granting purposes, but what we fund is what is expended based on and supported by actual receipts.
Maybe I didn't phrase it well, Mr. Chair. As Representative Johnson was asking, how do we know he didn't hire his cousin? And I'm thinking I can go pay anything I want to pay for a 2x4 or a roll of fencing. How do we know that these are reasonable costs, or do we?
Senator Dukes, the only controls we have at this point in time are controls on the good sense of the folks in the small grant group through the districts and the councils who are reviewing them. And they typically have a reasoned sense of what local costs are, what reasonable local costs are, particularly through the districts that work with cost caps based from the Farm Bill program.
You kind of divvy it up. Does each region know that
generally speaking, they can approve grants of about X number of dollars?
Senator Dukes, that was a point I was just about to make. That's yes. That what we did with this program is establish a $100,000 cap for the biennium, the two-year cycle, that was available to any given group to draw on. So the amount at stake with any particular group was no more than $100,000 for 2 years, and the cap on the size of the grant was $10,000 on any given grant, with a limit that no one person could receive a grant more than once a year, regardless of the merit of the project. And we continued on the same track of receipts, reimbursables for receipts.
Jeff, I see at least two grants for 120 and 123,000. How does that work?
No, Chair Messerly, I would presume that those grants were for the fire recovery. I think if you is the only one in that list that should be anything more than $10,000 would be for fire recovery projects.
Okay, it's road damage. One of them is road damage by fire.
Right there.
And the other is reseeding, right?
Apparently those got rolled into the small grant program spreadsheet.
And the reason they were rolled into the small grant spreadsheet is that we used that same administrative mechanism through the small grant group where there were fires this past summer to review and identify the local priorities.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Representative Johnson?
I'm sorry, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I'm having real trouble with this in just the exchange that you had with Senator Dukes. Just while you guys were talking, I'm going through here and just trying to add up grants to one organization within the 0103 period, and I make no comment on the value of the organization because, in fact, I've contributed to them. But I've added up over $2 million just sitting here listening to you talk to Ducks Unlimited.
Chair Messerly, Representative Johnson, the parameters that I laid out for Senator Dukes were with respect to the small grant program. We provided you with spreadsheets for the entire grant program at, and by different categories. So the regular grant program would not necessarily doesn't have a limit on the number of times a given entity can apply for a grant or a dollar amount that a given entity could receive in a grant. Those are reviewed both on the technical merit and through the scrutiny of the OEB process identified as they come along.
Could you give, Mr. Chair, could you give us your top 10 grant recipients from all programs in 0103? The top 10 grant recipients and the dollar amounts.
Representative Johnson, I'm certain you can. And what you'll and I'll just characterize it a little bit based on my general knowledge of what that's likely to show. You will see that among the top 10 grant recipients will be a couple of the members of that list will be because of one grant that has been received, and it was for a large dollar amount. One of those will be a state agency. Department of Fish and Wildlife is a significant recipient of the Measure 66 funds and federal funds that we give out. And then there will be some larger grants that we have done with councils or districts where they have prioritized a package of fish barriers they want to remove over time and a sequence for doing it that we did a grant for taking on an action plan that spanned more than one project. But we will pull those for you and have that tomorrow.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. You put a finer point on what I'm asking for. Then maybe you could do it in terms of just private grant recipients that aren't state agencies, bundled watershed projects, but let's just focus for the time being on the small grant program.
Chair Messerly, Representative Johnson, we will, and I think if you're willing, I'd like to talk to you a little bit after the meeting today, and we'll put an even finer point on it, so I come back with exactly what you're interested in seeing.
Thank you.
And I think, Representative, it would be, I assume you can pull this off the computer or tag it in
If you could do that on a large grants too, I think would be to show a clear picture too.
That'd be fine. Welcome that.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Morgan.
It'd be easier just to, I'm assuming that you could combine all of these categories of grants together and then just sort them by the grantees so that they all show up clumped together.
Representative Morgan, we can do that. We can sort by any one of the cells that you see on the spreadsheets in front of you and by a couple that aren't on there, by county or a few things like that. So that's why I'll be happy to talk to any of the members after the meeting. We can scope exactly the computer run you'd like us to make, and we'll do it.
Any more questions, comments? Senator Dukes.
A comment. I tend to like this type of grant because it's small and it's flexible. I can't screw up too badly on any one project because there's a limit on it. And you can usually get them on the ground pretty fast when you get a landowner who's willing to work with you and you have a need. And so often one small project can make a real difference in terms of getting fish back. However, having said all that, I will just sort of let you know that this is kind of like some of the other things whenever the state gets into the granting process that over time I'm going to be watching. For example, there's one in there for brush whacking of sagebrush, and then we're going to let the natural grasses grow. How on earth do we know that the sagebrush isn't going to just grow back? It's sort of like, I figure the people on the East Coast must wonder, haven't we saved that fish yet? Because we've been throwing an awful lot of money at the salmon. And at some point, and it won't be this year, but at some point I'm going to ask the questions of how many acres have we reseeded and how many miles have we refenced and exactly how many miles of fence should there be in the state of Oregon? In other words, you know, are we on the second generation of seeding at this point? Are we on, and did the hundreds of thousands of dollars at that point of brush whacking and stuff actually do us any good in the long term? I'm not so interested that it gave us one summer of less sagebrush, and I'm not sure how many, I saw a lot of, we want to cut stuff down so that it supplies more moisture for critters. That's nice, I guess, but I need to know that there are long-term advantages to these, and I know from personal experience that a lot of these projects, a little bit of money can go a long way, and they have big ramifications. Some of these don't appear to pass that test, so, and that's okay. You're going to have a variety of these things, but I'm just telling you that long term, I'm going to want somebody to be able to assure me that we haven't now fenced in the entire state of Oregon, numbers wise on charts like this, when it still not have kept the cows out of the stream or saved the salmon.
Chair Mesley, Senator Dukes, two quick comments. One directly responsive to that, and that is that that's one of the things that. One of the reasons that I think that the Oregon Plan monitoring piece and the reporting and information database piece was put in OWEB because it merges with the grant program very significantly. And Kelly Moore and Jay are here today to talk to you a little bit about where we're headed and what we've done and where we're headed, both with tracking accomplishments as well as a monitoring program that will validate, you know, what the trends are as a result of those investments. The other comment goes back to the small grant program, and I will tell you as a director of a grant program now for 3 years, this grant program, what I have seen is a tremendous tension between my responsibility as an agency director to be accountable for every dollar that goes through this program and make sure that we are responsive to a dynamic, fluid grassroots movement that is trying to work with landowners that don't want to wait 9 months for a $5,000 check to do something that could make a lot of common sense to them to do. And the pressure that we discussed in this committee 2 years ago, it was very significant to have a block grant program that would simply have divided up a dollar amount and placed it in each county and gotten a report 2 years later on how it had been spent. And it took about 16 months to negotiate the rules that govern this small grant program through that came up with a compromise, and then my board adopted that small grant program with explicit condition that we were going to run it until the summer of 2003 and then step back and do an independent evaluation. How was the money spent? Was it spent on the right things, or do we need to pull back or do we need to go forward? And both in the context of the small grant program, but also right down to the fact that we look at every receipt down to $5 for our grant program when they come in the door, and how whether we should, whether there should be a cutoff. Those are the kinds of tensions that we try to balance in order to be responsive but also accountable. And I appreciate the questions because they go right to the core of our mission and our responsibilities, and we try to strike that balance both in the number of grant cycles we have, in the technical review that different projects go through, but also try to shape that so that it varies, so that we're not running a $5,000 project through the same technical review that we do for a $5 million project. And I guess that's a lot of sweeping statements, but that's kind of the feel of the administrative issues that we face at OWEB with the staff we have.
I want to follow up, and then Representative Morgan has a question. There are a lot of projects, and they all have value, I'm sure of that. But one inventory I would be very interested in is how many miles of stream we've opened up through culverts or blockages and those kind of things, because I think that probably really directly benefits the fisheries much more than a lot of the other projects we have going on with.
And Senator Mesley, the restoration inventory database that we keep, that I think Ken and Jay will be up here a little later today talking about, has records on the projects that are completed. And I can say that the breakout's about 30% of the money we've spent in the last biennium went toward that kind of project activity in some combination of culverts or push-up dams or things like that. So
sometimes just physical blockages,
mm-hmm.
rocks or whatever. Representative Morgan?
More of a comment than a question, Mr. Chair. I really just wanted to follow up on Senator Duke's comments and Jeff's comments that the small grant program was put in place in response to what we heard from watershed councils about their frustrations at having to go through the OWEB grant process for every single grant. And we had a number of the watershed councils that had been on the ground and had track records over a period of time come to us and request the ability to have this kind of program, and the agency responded to that and put it together. And, you know, I'm sure that there are going to be problems as we work the program through, but I think that what we need to bear in mind here is the point that you brought out so well, Senator Duke, that there has to be a cost-effective and time-effective way for the watershed councils to deal with the needs of small discrete projects in their districts rather than entering into this giant granting cycle and waiting for a long time before they get the answer to it. And I think that rather than just saying, well, we tried it once and it has a few problems, so let's throw it out, I would be much more predisposed to trying to figure out what answers are to the biggest clumps of problems and continuing to evolve the program. Because I think that part of this is developing the management capacity and the decision-making capacity within the watershed councils to be able to manage these kinds of programs, and that we should be moving in that direction. And that it is, I think, real frustrating on the watershed council and the soil and water conservation district level for them to have to drag every single grant proposal through the giant circle.
Good point. When did you want a break for our guests?
Mr. Chair, since we're done with the grant program and about to start the brief agency operation piece of our budget, this may be a good time, if you would like.
Gregory, or did you want to introduce?
I was just going to say that Section 6 of the binder relates to the IMST and these are some materials that the team put together to put in front of you that relates to the budget component that's housed in OWEB. So I'll let Dr. Stan Gregory come to the table and talk to you about the program.
Jay, did you want to come up too? You mentioned both of them together, didn't you?
I think that we'll leave that to you and to Dr. Gregory and see if you need our staff up here as well. It's up to you.
Okay. Doctor?
Thank you, Senator Messerly and Ways and Means Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you. provided, the IMST provided an explanation of the statutory basis for our team and the functions of the IMST for the state of Oregon and the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. We tried to highlight our accomplishments for the last biennium, the products that we plan on completing within this biennium, and then our potential contributions in the next biennium. We can go through the specifics of any of those that you would like. Our accomplishments were fairly similar in number to the accomplishments in the previous biennium, roughly more than 20 days of, or 22 two-day meetings, so roughly 40 or 50 days of public meetings, more than 50 presentations within the biennium, three major reports, 20 letter reports to agencies or entities of the state, and conducting a public workshop at the request of the legislature and serving on the recovery task force at the request of the legislature. We also identified some of the trends or ways that we anticipate operating differently in the next biennium. We generally see a decrease in the number of large or major reports and more of the letter reports or reviews for the agencies and entities of the state. We see providing workshops on critical issues, again, negotiating or working with the Governor's Natural Resource Office, OWEB, and the legislature to identify those topics that are most critical. One of the other components that we indicated in our annual report, and we reiterate here, is we encourage and invite the state to conduct a review of the IMST to see if our performance has been what was anticipated when the IMST was first formed, and if there are improvements that would allow us to better serve the state. And we encourage the state to move forward on that. Obviously, that's nothing that we should do ourselves, but we encourage the governor's office and the legislature to perhaps work with OWEB to conduct that kind of review of the IMST so that we can be more effective. We were asked specifically to deal with budgetary issues, and as Jeff mentioned briefly, the current budget request for the full funding of IMST would be $983,000 for the biennium, but as a result of the budget reductions suggested by the Department of Administrative Services, we included the reduction of the IMST to a budget of $795,000 for the biennium. And under that reduction, there would be a reduction in the FTE or the involvement of the seven scientists on the IMST to 0.25, and a reduction, elimination of one of the assistants of the team, and a reduction of the travel and supplies budget. We anticipate that that would reduce the productivity of the IMST, obviously, because we would have less time to invest, and the number of workshops and participation in meetings requiring travel would also be reduced. Then we were further asked to indicate the what we felt the budget would be for the minimum performance or implementation of the IMST, and we provided that. We estimated that to reduce all of the IMST members to 0.2 FTE, eliminate one member, and eliminate half of our support staff would be the point at which we would feel it would be no longer able to function and meet the challenges or charges given us by the state. And the budget for that would be $422,000 for the biennium, and we feel that that would be a very minimal operation that would eliminate workshops, most travel, and allow us to mostly review specific reports for the agencies. Thank you, Senator Messerly and committee, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Doctor, how do you come up with the priorities on your work plan for 2003-2005? You've got several projects listed here.
Several of those are currently underway, and so the temperature report is almost completed, and so that should be out the door early this summer. The urban report is currently underway and about, I would say, 60% of the way completed. The Eastern Oregon report has just begun, the scoping on that, and the others have not begun at all. These are ones we had a brainstorming session of issues that we felt were most critical and had not been yet answered by the IMSD, and we'd heard from various parties, the governor's office, the legislature, scientific meetings, the public. And so that was a result of brainstorming, and that's how we came up with those priorities.
And who requests, do people different, the governor's office or different agencies request that you do studies, or how do they come to you?
Senator Messerly, we receive requests for reviews or studies from the governor's office, from specific agencies, from OWEB itself, from legislators, from a small number from the public. The majority of them come from agencies, OWEB, the governor's office, or the legislature, to be honest.
And do you require, for example, if an individual legislator had a request, and I guess maybe this for my own benefit, do we have a process? Does it have to be approved by the leadership? Or
Senator Messerly, to my knowledge, there is no process that's required. Any legislator can approach us individually, and then every response that we have, every project that we take up, we discuss as a team and approve in the public meeting before we start any work on it.
And I guess the same for a public request. Does it have to be sponsored by any group or any of the government agencies? Or
Senator Messerly, it does not have to be sponsored by any group. It can come from a private citizen, or it can come from a group.
So that's in the law, then? There's no clarification in the law itself? Yes, I can leave that.
Yeah. Senator Messerly, I don't know that it is stated in the bill. I could investigate that and give you that information. It is in our charter that we were asked to prepare by the enabling legislation, and in that charter we indicate that any member of the public of Oregon can bring a request to us, and then the team would decide whether it would take that task on.
Any other questions? Comments? Yes. Senator Dukes?
I like your suggestion that we do a review of the IMST. How do we do that? I mean, you're the independent group. Is there another independent or group of independent groups that could review? How do you review OWEB?
Yes.
I mean, IMST.
Yeah. Senator Messerly, Senator Dukes, you accurately identify a conundrum that we faced ourselves as we do reviews of reviews of reviews, and it starts to seem like reviews exponentially increasing. I would suggest that OWEB might be the best group to serve the legislature and the governor's office in conducting this review, and there could be a brainstorming of how to do it, but I think there are knowledgeable people who have experienced the IMST in a variety of ways, the outcome and the productivity of the IMST. That would include agencies, that would include legislators or members of the governor's office. It would also include citizen groups that have a strong interest in the IMST and that have participated at various levels with different reports. And so I would go to knowledgeable people that have experience in the performance of groups serving the state, and have a select team and have them review what we have done, what the charges and tasks have been, what the level of commitment is possible, and then see if this is really serving the state as best it could, and to make suggestions for improvement.
You're talking about a process review, then, and not so much a science review.
Senator Messerly, Senator Dukes, yes. It is a review of the implementation, the process of the IMST, how we conduct business. We are wide open to anyone reviewing the technical merit of any of our reviews as well. If there are concerns, then by all means the state should review that as well.
But you shop that around. In the course of doing it, you shop that.
Right.
So,
yeah. And so, for instance, in the Klamath report that should be hitting the streets in the next 2 to 3 weeks, there were 22 external reviews of that report by technical folks. And so we think we're getting very thorough technical review. But we'd be welcome, if there are concerns, we would welcome any form of review.
When a state agency makes a request of you and you decide to do that report for them, do you charge them?
Senator Messerly and Senator Dukes, no, there is no charge for any of our services other than the support provided by the state and federal grants.
Okay. Can you tell me, at the $983,000 level, how much of members' time do we have, FTE level?
Senator Messler and Senator Dukes, that's 0.33 FTE for all team members. I apologize for that not
being in the document. That's okay. I'm trying to make these three different sections come together so I can understand them. And for research assistants, and then we drop down to 0.25 with three research, and then go down to the last one. Okay. Thank you. I have issues around some of this when we get around to talking about that.
Any other questions? Comment? Thank you very much, Doctor. Appreciate your patience waiting for us to get to you.
No, thank you, Senator Messling. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. And we're always happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Jeff, I'm passed a note that the House needs to be on the floor at 3, and it's been requested that we try to close down by 2:50 so they have some time to swing by their offices.
Mr. Chair, I've got my watch out, and I'll keep looking at it.
I'll wave you when we're in the morning.
There really are only two budget, significant content pieces of the budget that are left and to explain anyway, and then we will be in wrap-up stage, I think. I'm going to go back to page 65, global page 65, which is section 3.1, which is the agency operations portion of our budget that relates to the agency operations. And as I mentioned yesterday, the day before, we divide our agency operations into grant administration and Oregon plan program pieces. And so the grant program administration is the first thing that's up. The first thing of significance is policy package number 70, and that is a $479,000 reduction to Measure 66 operational monies that is necessary to balance the Measure 66 funds that the governor's balanced budget looked at. The question really is, how are we going to do that? Package 70 looks at those revenue reductions and administratively identified them by DAS, and those are the ones that are reflected in the governor's balanced budget, the DAS administratively identified reductions. And essentially what it is under the GBB is a 2 FTE reduction to the agency's budget plus other SNS administrative reductions, along with the reductions we've already talked about with respect to the IMST and the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program. After the budget was submitted and we moved forward after printing deadlines and working with DAS, we came up with a technical correction that OWEB would like to propose that is a change to the governor's balanced budget that will accomplish the same $479,000 reduction, but in a different way. And I'm going to direct your attention to the fourth tab, and it's page 7, global page 78, and that is a table that very clearly lines out the difference. And I'll get to the difference here real fast. Essentially, the technical adjustment that DAS has come to the table with that we have worked through would have the 2 FTE reduction reduced down to 1. And that 1 is a vacancy that currently exists in the monitoring program for the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. And the position that would be saved would be an ISS 7, which is the only permanent position we have to implement the statutory responsibility given to us by Senate Bill 946 last session to coordinate natural resource data sets and make information more readily accessible to Oregon plan partners. And in order to compensate for saving that particular position in the agency budget, we proposed a reduction in an equal amount of dollars in our S&S services and supplies portion of our budget, and held IMST and the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program harmless so that they would not suffer an increased reduction, but it would stay the same regardless of whether the Package 170 was adopted or the technical adjustment that's now proposed. So the essence of it is we need to accomplish that reduction. We know that, and we've put a different way of doing it on the table and are happy to discuss that with the committee or work it through with staff. But as a matter of advancing the policy objectives of Senate Bill 946, our proposal was to keep the ISS 7 position in our base budget and accomplish the reduction differently than eliminating the position. If you have any questions about that, I'll be happy to answer.
Senator Dukes?
Could you maybe walk me through this in a different way, because I missed some major pieces here. Is this a we're cutting because we're supposed to cut budgets thing, or is there's no shortfall here, is there?
Senator Dukes, Chair Mesley, I'm going to let the Department of Administrative Services talk to you about how this reduction came about.
Chair Dukes, Senator Mesley, for the record, this is Lori Byerly from the Department of Administrative Services. As part of developing the Measure 66 budgets for the natural resource agencies, we looked at that split between the operational piece and the capital piece. And on the operational side, for some of the agencies, there is a shortfall because of inflation, the costs on the operational side continue to drive up, but we're limited at how much of that money we can distribute for operations. So we made some reductions in 070 packages to stay in alignment with the operational.
So we made reductions in OWEB so that the other agencies that got them money could be whole.
Chair Messner, we made reductions in all the natural resource agency budgets in 070 packages for the operations side, because that was constrained by the split that we have to provide to the capital and operating side. So that's what this is related to. It's not related to any other kind of reduction other than trying to maintain the split between operations and capital on the major $66.
Jeff, put in perspective for me the monitoring person that you're talking, position you're talking about eliminating.
Chair Mesley, Senator Dukes, no question, I'm very concerned about eliminating that. That position I held vacant while we were going through a very deliberate process to identify a monitoring strategy, a strategy for implementing the Oregon Plan monitoring program over time that was signed off on by the IMST and the Natural Resource Cabinet. And I could have, when that position was given to us in the last biennium, we could have filled it immediately, but because we were in this process to say, what is our trajectory going to look like over time, I at least said, let's hold the position and identify the skill set that we need that will best serve the coordination function that we have. Kelly Moore is the one position that we do have, and that was the additional. I moved staffing around in this last biennium so that my deputy Ken Beerley was working very heavily on the monitoring program instead of filling that vacancy to lift off the strategy development, and they're here to talk to you about that.
So you have two staff people working on monitoring?
I have had a portion of my deputy's time working on monitoring, along with he's also been working on the information strategy piece and the biennial report piece as well. So I had Ken basically teaming.
In terms of authorized positions to do monitoring, we have two?
We have two positions that are authorized to do monitoring, an NRS-4 in the base budget and this NRS-3.
We're talking about going down to one.
And we were talking about going down to one. The vacancy, the NRS-3 is vacant, and so it's been held as a frozen position.
Mr. Chair, when we get to work session, this is what I'm going to want to talk about. Okay. There are some things in life that stick with you. That headline in the Oregonian a number of years back about the $13 million that had been spent by Bonneville Power, and had they couldn't find a fish they'd saved, is one of them that stuck with me, and it was because they weren't doing monitoring and assessment. And I've had discussions with OWEB as long as they've been an agency about that the key thing we have to do And to say that we're going to go down to one FTE in that agency that's going to oversee monitoring in the state of Oregon is ridiculous if we don't want to find the next headline saying state of Oregon.
Thank you for your comment, Senator. I would think, Jeff, that you've taken an awful lot of your staff's time, I'm sure, setting up the monitoring criteria and the protocol. Are we getting that leveled out to where maybe it's not as time-consuming for the state-level staff?
Senator Messley, the short answer to that is no. I frankly don't think so. I think what we're finding is that as the monitoring moves into implementation on a broader scale, geographically, out of just the coastal basins and into the other areas where we have listed stocks, and we are trying to coordinate individual agency monitoring efforts in declining budgets, in a time of declining budgets, what we're finding is that there's a premium on coordination and leveraging and working. We're seeing a significant portion of our work, frankly, working with the federal agencies and the NOAA Science Center to make sure that everything that's being done is going to be recognized in a roll-up that will be acknowledged and accepted in the context of the listings. We do have a pure coordination function, and frankly, I appreciate Senator Duke's remarks. The driver on this decision was I had to eliminate an entire program that I have statutory mandate to implement or thin the soup on the monitoring part, and that's a large piece of what drove the either-or decision. We couldn't get there without and save both. But we are poised, based on the work we've done in the last 18 months, particularly with the IMST signing off and saying, if you implement this strategy, we'll have a long-term approach that will be very valid and recognized to really take this task on and move it out of the good work that's been done, but it has not been provided. The context has not been provided for it. And Kelly Moore will be happy to talk to you a little bit about that. There have been some significant recognitions of the work that the Oregon Plan Monitoring Team has accomplished that have led to had a significant impact even on things like our fishing season in the coming cycle that have a huge economic impact to the state. Just because there's a comfort level, both because of ODFW's fish management policies, but also because of the monitoring work that is validating some of the habitat improvements that have been made that led to comments on the record about from the Pacific State Marine Fishery Commission. I'm close on that. I'm not good with that acronym. To recognize that they were relying at least in part on some of the work that the Oregon Plan Monitoring Team has been able to show. And so we have a lot to gain by staying the course. It's tough decisions, and that's one reason I wanted to have a very explicit conversation with you about this in the budget hearing.
Representative Krieger.
Chair, I share Senator Duke's concern for this because the monitoring started out at a foundation at some point, and that's how you measure where you're going. And what type of component is there in the grants now regarding the requirement for monitoring this year?
Kelly, you want to come up?
I think that needs to be, unless something's changed, you had a...
Chair Messley, Representative Krieger, I'm going to let others join, Kelly Moore join me up here, but we do have a monitoring piece attached to every grant that is scaled both in time and what's required based on the kind of project that's being implemented and how it fits with what's happening in that area. And a lot of the work of the monitoring team right now is not only just Kelly's time is being spent not only trying to coordinate water quality and fish distribution and various agency programs, but trying to knit together a way that the monitoring that's being accomplished on a project-by-project basis or as a monitoring effort by a local group can be knitted into the larger picture. And Kelly, if you want to add.
Chair Messley and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kelly Moore, and I work as the monitoring policy advisor at OWEB. President Krieger, your question was asking about what's required on every grant, and there is a monitoring requirement for each grant. It starts with what we call the either compliance or implementation monitoring, which is the proof that the work was done, the fiscal aspect of monitoring. But there's also a requirement to turn in a report that completely bored or annual report of a document showing what happened on the ground. But that doesn't answer the questions that Senator Dukes was raising earlier about, well, so what do we get from this? And that's a complex question, and that is what the monitoring strategy is designed to do, because it's a way of looking overall at the status and trends of the populations, looking at the effectiveness of specific types of actions, and to do these two things in a way that's efficient. So I do have that job at OLEVA trying to coordinate that. It was established by Senate Bill 945 last session, and I work very closely with other natural resource agencies to implement these programs, ODFW, Department of Forestry, Environmental Quality, Agriculture, and all the rest. So they're all in there.
Mr. Chair, I want to comment, too, on the monitoring piece of this. And to me, I can't underscore how important this piece is to the whole reason that the Oregon plan is in place. And I think the work that Kelly's done over the years on getting everybody's data so it looks the same and it can be laid over top of each layer of it can be laid over top and it can conform with each other. And then the work that's going on right now to define how to describe what the monitoring needs are the piece that's going to be a hugely valuable part of the Oregon plan as we move forward. And as we move into a place where we're beginning to negotiate with our federal partners on how to delist or take over more of the management for the species that are listed, it's the data that's going to provide the answers to the questions about how we're doing over time and what we know and what we don't know and what we can be relatively certain of and what we know we can't be certain of. And if we don't build as solid of a wall of data as we can and have it organized so that we can see where the holes are and where the strengths are, then I think that a whole lot of what we're doing is really just kind of bailing out money and throwing it out the front door for watershed councils to do what they think might be the right thing, but we have no basis to ultimately judge that at all, and we have no basis to build a case ultimately when it comes to talking about why species are listed, whether they need to continue to be listed, and whether we can build recovery plans or build scenarios that give enough certainty of successful recovery that we can get out from under these listings. So I would very much counsel against diminishing OWEB's ability to proceed in this area.
Senator Dukes?
Yeah, I think as long as we're going to do these things and put this much money into projects on the ground, we're going to have to do an adequate job of monitoring. And what I'm going to do is go take a look at where we are currently in that whole, how we're moving around Measure 66 and federal salmon money. Because as we're all entering into this, we can help other agencies. I think we've got to take care of the core first. And to me, that's what we set OWEB up to be, was the core. I still remember those meetings, and most of us do, that where we said, I remember it was Representative Morgan who said it the loudest, we want to make sure that when the then governor moves on, that the Oregon Salmon Plan still remains. And now we're in that transition phase, and we need to make sure that it's still there. And when we're all gone, it'll still be there. And so I want to take a look at those and see. We're only talking $119,000 here for this position. But I also want to talk at some point, Mr. Chair, about the IMST. We struggled last time and thought maybe we could get to halftime of their time. They are one of the most valuable things we have. We use them again and again. They are the one that get us beyond us and pork and specialized projects and get us into good sound science. They are the ones, their work is going to be a big piece of getting the feds to agree to use the Oregon plan as recovery. I mean, I think the monitoring and the IMST are two huge pieces. And I want to go out and
and see. We're not talking a lot of money here. How to massage things a little bit and get it back.
I mean, I can get all excited about monitoring, and it must be a genetic defect because I suspect that most of my colleagues in this building won't, but those of you around the table here will too. So,
thank you, Sharon. I want to open up another related subject, though, Kelly, and that is the prototypes for the monitoring so that it meets the standards of the federal agencies and other scientists. How do you deal with that when I would assume that non-professionals are doing a lot of the data gathering?
Senator Messerly, it's true that there are, again, these different levels of monitoring. And for non-professionals who are out, say, doing water quality monitoring or evaluating a restoration project, we have facilitated development of standard protocols that are out there for people to use or on our webpage. And in fact, when a grant comes to OWEB to do a monitoring project at the local level, there's a checkoff for whether or not they intend to use those methods. OWEB also supports a volunteer monitoring coordinator position at DEQ that works with local districts and councils to help ensure that their data is at the standard is acceptable at their level. At the statewide level, a lot of my work is with federal agencies, NOAA fisheries, Forest Service people, to look, because everyone has their own program, and we're trying to find more continuity among them. The biggest news in terms of having Oregon's work accepted is our work directly with NOAA fisheries on the status and trend monitoring that's part of our monitoring strategy one on assessment. Because the work that was begun in 1997 under the Oregon plan was implemented in mostly your districts, is giving us the information we need about abundance and distribution, productivity, and sort of the diversity of these populations. They're looking at that, and those are the same kinds of criteria that are going to be required by our ESA sufficiency process. They're mentioned in the House bill just cleared yesterday, House Bill 2138, which defines terms for the Oregon plan. Those things are in there, and those are the kinds of answers we're getting from ODFW, DEQ, and the other agencies. I'm going to coordinate that. Last month, the ISAP, which is Independent Scientific Advisory Panel to the Power Plant Council, reviewed system-wide proposals in the Columbia Basin. These proposals, there were five proposals. They rejected four of them, approved one. The one they endorsed was a status and trends monitoring approach that was exactly based and developed in cooperation with us in Oregon. And that the price tag for that is high, and Bonneville right now, of course, is in not much better shape than the state of Oregon, but it established a precedent for us to move into the Columbia Basin with the same kind of status and trends monitoring our agencies are doing on the coast. We have an existing contract, or ODFW rather has an existing contract with Bonneville to implement a pilot project for that in the John Day Basin starting as soon as we get the contract worked through.
Representative Morgan.
I just want to kind of bounce off of Senator Dukes' comments and just ask you to consider that a lot of the monitoring that is critical to building the data that we need for NOAA fisheries comes out of other state agencies, out of ODFW and out of DEQ and out of forestry and out of ag, and that the backfilling that we're doing in those areas to keep those programs going is real critical. So the just a balancer there, and I kind of go back to the comments that were made when Terry Thompson was here talking to us, and his stress on wanting to put as much money as possible into the granting process for the watershed councils, but the need to maintain the functions within the land-based agencies that support the data gathering are, in my opinion, more critical than that.
I support all that. I just want to talk a little bit.
Mr. Chair, I might respond, even though there wasn't a question, in that the governor's revised budget that has a spreadsheet for backfilling, one of the things that we did have an opportunity to do as a cabinet was work very closely with Kelly and with the agency directors and the other agencies. One of the core things that we tried to preserve in that exercise was the capacity of the other agencies to continue the monitoring and data collection needs that are the core of the program. And that was one of the top couple of priorities when we were looking at fund shifting that is in that governor's revised budget spreadsheet you have.
Any other questions of Mr. Moore? Did Mr. Nicholas want to make any comments here? Sure. You don't have to. Just if you have anything to say, I know you're a very quiet guy.
Chair Messley, members of the committee, I think you've all heard me make presentations on the biennial reports before. Representative Johnson, I'm not sure if you have.
I have not.
In the interest of time here, I'm not going to talk about the biennial. I think we have copies of them here. I'd like to mention five things about this report that I think are important to the future. The first is that this first biennial report provides a standard format that's needed to conduct performance audits and provide accountability for public funding. This standard format will allow routine comparisons of, in the future, to find out if our investments are tracking with the priorities and the assessments conducted in each of 15 basins. I'm confident, I'm hopeful, that through our future work, we will come up with a set of watershed health indicators for each of these 15 basins. And those watershed health indicators will allow us to track the basin scale trends in the environment. And that's something that the state cannot do right now reliably. Fourth, it provides a record of the implementation recommendations. So we can track, are we implementing those recommendations or not? And finally, these things that I mentioned, this is the kind of quantitative public record information that's needed by the legislature, the public, agency boards and commissions to shape future policy direction and funding decisions.
One of the things that we've moved Jay into doing also as part of the biennial report production is looking very closely at the database that we've kept for a number of years on completed restoration projects. Anything that OEB funds goes into that database, so it's the number of stream miles that have been fenced or the number of miles that fish passage barrier removal is opened and quantitative accomplishments. That is a voluntary reporting program for anybody that is undertaking restoration activities that aren't funded by an OEB grant, and we're trying to make that a little more user-friendly so that we grab in a greater percentage of the restoration work that's being done that we're not involved in the funding of, and that has a direct relationship on where the biennial report will head in the future as well.
Absolutely, Martin.
I think it has been really good to see the evolution of this report over the years, and this is the first one I think that really has the way that the data is displayed and the amount of data about what's going on the ground is really improved in this one over the ones before. But I did have a criticism of this, and I remember that it was either the first or the second report that you could flip the pages and look down on the bottom and kind of see a salmon growing. And I was disappointed that that wasn't carried forward.
Chair Messley, Representative Morgan, if I may respond to your, I might, appropriate criticism. I am a public employee, and I serve my supervisors who had very rigid restrictions.
Where did this start?
And I was warned severely to restrain my creative and somewhat zany pen. However, thank you.
But there'll be a growing salmon next time. Mr. Chair, by my watch, there's about 5 minutes before you wanted to shut the hearing down.
You got it.
We have one more thing that relates to the Oregon plan that we better put on the table just so that you have had the full breadth of what's up at our operational budget. And one more handout that we will give you so that you have a weighty enough package that you know you've spent a week with us. And that relates to the information system strategy. And Janine Salawasser was on a two-year limited duration position to kind of lift this program up and get it started, and she had some medical issues come up and couldn't be with us today. So Ken's kind of stepping in, and she's fine, and so there's not a serious complication. I think she just could not be here today. So Ken's going to fill in.
For the record, Ken Beerley, Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, and Jeff asked me to be Janine. My colleagues have suggested that there isn't enough lipstick to make this pig look good. However, I will try. The responsibility for taking the monitoring information and other natural resource information, developing a consistent protocols for data, integrate that data and deliver that data was established last legislative session with Senate Bill 946. It directed OEB to take leadership in the development, integration, and delivery of natural resource information. The staff, the limited duration staff that we've had, Janine Salwasser, Doug Tara, have spent a great deal of time working directly with the Department of Administrative Services, Oregon Geographic Information Council, in trying to develop common approaches to develop data protocol and standards so that there would be common data protocols for natural resource information across state agencies. We have invested and have completed in some investments in the development of data. We've invested in the development of stream layers at 1 to 24,000. We've invested in the development of fish distribution at 1 to 24,000 scale. And it's for the first time that information has been made available. We're working with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, who developed the fish distribution data, to ensure that that will have a long-term life other than a single project. The work on stream layer at 1 to 24,000 has been a cooperative effort between federal agencies, Forest Service, BLM, and Oregon Water Resources Department. The Oregon Water Resources Department has taken the leadership in that effort. In data integration, the work is focused with the Oregon Geographic Information Council. And we've developed a process, our staff has developed a process to bring data standards and protocols to OWEB for new data, natural resource data that would be appropriate for the Oregon plan. And in data delivery, we are currently looking at development of a specific request for proposals for developing web access to information. We will probably do it on a trial basis for a single geographic area to see how that works, to make that common information available to anybody through the Internet. Staff has been working hard. I think the conversation earlier about the technical adjustment in the budget deals specifically with our capability to continue this effort.
And really, over the long term, this is just lifting off as opposed to the monitoring program, which has been in place for a while. This is a critical program that is just in the liftoff stage. The work, the groundwork that has been done in developing the strategy that would be a collaborative effort between the State Department of Administrative Services, the university system, and the natural resource agencies of the state and federal government to move data through a web portal so it would be more accessible for as a decision-making tool for all Oregon Plan partners is really the essence of where this particular statutory responsibility is headed. And we have one permanent position, and that's the subject of that package 170 and the technical adjustment, and then a limited duration position that ends at the end of this biennium. And so those are the issues that will be on the table when we come back for work session. And with respect to the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watershed, pieces of our agency budget. The only other thing that was on the table still that we didn't discuss was the use of operational grant grant money overhead for a administering the grant program and the limited duration FTE that is a package that is described on page 65, and I think it's self-explanatory, and we can talk about it when there's time in the committee or tomorrow, depending on the public comment.
That brings up the question, Jeff. Do you expect many people here tomorrow?
Mr. Chair, we have done our best to, instead of having floodgates open and everyone feel like they had to come, to put a structure at least for watershed councils where we've identified two or three people to come from each of our five regions to sit as a panel that we've made known to other folks so they could funnel comments, try to funnel comments through some organized structure with our constituencies. So I know you'll have five groups of three that will want to talk about what's happening in their part of the state and the program. Beyond that, I'm really not certain. I have not heard any great rumblings from thunder from the distance that would tell me that you have a situation like you had about a week ago with respect to your hatchery constituencies that came in. I suspect that we'll be able to fill the time, but it won't be overflow.
Well, there's two reasons I'm asking. One is, do we need a bigger room? And I'm told that we probably don't have access to a bigger room. But secondly, if you've got 15 people coming in, that will not allow a whole lot of time if there's general public that comes in either. So.
Mr. Chair, that was when we were getting requests from folks about whether they should come, that was the best way we could structure it to say, look, there's five different regions of the state. Why don't we just have some representatives from those regions that kind of collect a consensus of feelings about things from there? And so they're not expecting, at least those people are not expecting to testify individually, but rather as a group. So that would be five presentations, and we told them that you would be very limiting in the amount of time that would be available because everyone that comes, you make every effort to hear them, and we don't have any idea who's coming besides those five.
Well, we'll manage that tomorrow then.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Brad. We might have some time for you to give some comments on your last item tomorrow.
Okay. I'll be ready to do that.
So with that, we'll thank you, and we'll close the public hearing and adjourn the committee.